Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
All right, all right, all right. We are back for episode 20666 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's Julian. Before I go anywhere, call in at 877-557-SWWP to get in contact with me, your intrusive thought therapist. And you may be looking around if you're watching here on YouTube, which I advise you do. Hey, Julian, this isn't your usual chair. This isn't usually where you sit. This isn't your studio that I've grown to know and love. And it's not. I'm so happy to share that I finally invested in converting the space that I have available by investing in a new beautiful chair, which you'll see throughout the episode. And when I stand up, you'll probably see more of as I walk out at the end of the show. I got a new plant down below here that you can't see, a Monstera that I actually propagated from a friend of mine. I moved my big old ZZ plant in here, and I have a nice little lamp light stand over here, which is quite nice. But I plan on making this my main fixture for solo episodes and also when I have guests come in, because it just kind of clears up the rest of my living space and just makes things a little easier for me, honestly, in terms of like cleanup and just organization, just creating a better feng shui and space. You know, living in New York, you're doing a lot of contortioning and shape shifting to move around furniture. And, you know, for a while when you're younger, you buy really masculine square pieces of furniture where you have to like kind of walk like a soldier at all these right angles just to, you know, get to your bathroom and or walk from your living room into your bedroom. And you're like swerving and jumping and juking. But now, you know, I've bought more softer rounded edges, more glass features, things that just open up the space, lighter colored rugs, glass countertops, which would be used for nefarious activities in the past, but are now just for the aesthetics of it. So it's nice to, as I get older, see my taste evolve and just kind of become an adult, I guess, truthfully is what I'm saying here. But yeah, it's been a quite a week, to be honest, guys. And I have the amazing pleasure of having a dear friend of mine on later this week. We're recording an episode that I actually might put out this week, which is going to be extremely music heavy. We're going to talk about the Clips album and extend Clips album, the Drake's performance 3 days at Wireless, his headlining weekend there. And then also talk about Bieber's album as well. He's a very dear friend of mine, and I'm super excited to share that episode with you. It's my buddy Jordan from Complex. We spent the 4th of July weekend together and had some really incredible conversations. And I said to him, like, man, I don't want to be that guy. But in the middle of our conversation, we were sitting at a bar. I said, can we please do this on my show? Like, this is a conversation worthy of saying into the microphone. So he's always traveling. I think he was in LA for a little bit. But when he gets back, which I believe is tomorrow, and then Wednesday, we'll record, at least that's the plan for now. Super excited to have like a really in-depth, educational and informative conversation about music with him. So do not get mad at me for not covering those topics. I'm saving them for him. I actually even considered not putting out the episode today that you're listening to now and pushing this episode later in the week. But then I realized there's other stuff that I can talk about alone where I can still fulfill my, you know, requirements to you, the listener, and also to myself of making sure I put out an episode every Tuesday. So in the spirit of being consistent and honoring my my schedule, today's episode is going to be heavily focused on the Epstein files, or lack thereof. Epstein files turned out to be a big hoax and what a conspiracy created by the deep state and the Clintons. Funny how that always works. And I really wanted to dive into what I think the state of the, I'd say Republican Party, but at this point, it's the state of nationalism for Trump and where this blunder has really fractured at the core of what the base of the MAGA movement, their foundation of what the MAGA movement is. This is like the jet engine plane hitting a steel beam and melting. That's how like cataclysmic of an event this is to the MAGA movement. So let's walk through it. If you're not familiar, months ago, there was a big show of it that Pam Bondi, the general attorney, and a bunch of other like Cash Patel, other CIA operatives and people that are the influencers of the White House staff crew paraded these binders with the Epstein files and all of the the findings that included, you know, the thousands of victims, the client list, the 10,000 hours of footage that was stored, and they paraded it around the grounds of the White House. Pam Bondi was asked, you know, where's the client list? She goes, it's sitting on my desk right now. J.D. Vance went on Theo Vaughn's podcast and said, you know, this is, Theo Vaughn made a quip about the Epstein files, and J.D. Vance goes, no, seriously, these need to come out. We've seen Kash Patel say this was like his priority, and then at the very flip of a coin say, well, that's beyond my jurisdiction. I don't know anything about that. It's literally your job. That is your job title. You are in charge of what happens with those files and how they are procured publicly. But then we're seeing the great 180, I should call it. But before we get to the turn, let's focus on the movement that made the Epstein files such a big deal within the MAGA community. If you don't remember, Trump was very bullish on releasing the Martin Luther King files, the JFK files, his January 6th overturning those convictions, and the Epstein files as well. And all things considered, Trump hinged this on the distrust of the elites and the institutions, saying, I'm the disruptor here. I'm the outsider. I'm here to blow the lid off these evil people that have been, you know, protecting PDFs and all of the biggest atrocities at large. In particular, when it comes to Trump, he'd always throw it on the Clintons. That was his biggest target on the list. Attack the Clintons, attack the Clintons, attack the Clintons. And then we're seeing, you know, in the media doesn't want you to know about these things. We can't trust the government. And he leaned heavily into the conspiracy world, tapping that the very vein of QAnon and filling their stories and their narratives with basically truth crumbs that would, you know, make them trust him and get them to the point where Trump would become the beacon of hope, the truth teller that they've always sought out, and the person that would expose the entire, you know, systematic government structure that we've seemingly have just fallen into. I think it's well known that even now Democrats alike, but certainly Republicans and conspiracy theorists at the time, and I'm talking like 2016, even prior, but mainly Trump's first term we're looking at, where the distrust in the government was rapidly rising, and it seemed like the general public, or what the people wanted, was left behind to protect those in power. These files being one of those things, the information within these files being one of those things. So now we're currently looking at this opportunity where MAGA supporters saw the Epstein files like as a rare opportunity to expose all of that corruption. You know, the fact that they hadn't been released, you know, is now undercut everything that they believe Trump would be for them. It has actually proved the very things that Trump once used as a dog whistle to rally his supporters. It proves that the system is rigged, that the system is corrupt, and it does protect, implicitly protects the very people that have created this system. Basically, it's a system that protects its own, and those own are the very bad people that Trump said he was going to expose. The MAGA movement is finding out that he is, in fact, one of those very people himself, which, let's be clear, myself and others alike have always known this about Trump. I'm dumbfounded, quite frankly, to find out how many MAGA people were unaware that Trump was implicated in those files, that he had a really longstanding relationship with Epstein, that he was, you know, on those flight logs numerous times, that he has quotes, you know, from 2002 or so when he said, you know, Jeffrey's a good friend of mine. He also added the line, he likes him young. I've never seen somebody with younger women than him. Like, there's all these very public, very known moments that I thought the MAGA right was highly aware of and chose to ignore. But with the release, well, with the lack of release of these files, I'm learning that they are also now learning those things for the first time, or just they were willfully ignorant or just ignored them the first time around, but now are using those moments as like, maybe he was one of them because of where they are standing now with these files non-existing. There's nothing to see here. Epstein hung himself. Case closed. You know, he's the only person that, you know, victimized over 1,000 women, and not one other person touched an underage girl. It's just his crimes, his own doing, and thank God he's gone. So that's really what they want you to believe. So we're seeing the from the current MAGA state, the distrust in the elites, that, you know, they often believed that these the people that are creating the government themselves operate above the law, and with the connection to, you know, child trafficking and high-powered individuals, they saw this as an opportunity for Trump to hold people accountable, lead with transparency, and have proof of like a two-tier justice system, right? And they, you know, with the names, the files holding names and releasing these names would then show not only, you know, that it wouldn't prove, it wouldn't just prove that the system is corrupt. It would put names to who in the system is corrupt, and really just could be the moment to pluck out the bad eggs from the government. We're seeing from Trump himself, this post from Truth Social, when he saw the initial backlash from people upset with him for not releasing the Epstein files. This is what he said. It's a very long and you'll see. This is Trump's post. What's going on with my boys, and in some cases gals? They're all going after Attorney General Pam Bondi, who's doing a fantastic job. We're on one team. MAGA. And I don't like what's happening. We have a perfect administration. The talk of the world and selfish people are trying to hurt it. All over a guy who never dies, Jeffrey Epstein. For years, it's Epstein. Over and over again. Why are we giving publicity to files written by... for files written by Obama, Crooked Hillary, Comey, Brennan, and the losers and criminals of the Biden administration who connected the world with the Russia hoax, the 51 intelligence agents, the laptop from hell, and more. They created the Epstein files, just like they created the fake Hillary Clinton Christopher Steele dossier that they used on me. And now my so-called friends are playing right into their hands. Let's pause here for a second. This is Trump's last-ditch effort at an attempt to just throw shit on the wall and see what sticks. He's using all of the trigger phrases, trigger names, trigger words to just displace blame and say, well, the FBI sees these files, but screw it. The Clintons created them. Obama created them. Let me just throw this on everybody's jacket of the people that I've convinced. He's just rallying up his base. Remember these names? Remember these names I've taught you to hate for years now? Hey, this is who did it. So it's not me you should be mad at. It's the very people you should already have hate towards, because I'm telling you, because I've told you for years to hate them. But now I'm also telling you that they actually created this list as well. And it shouldn't be hard for you to make the leap to blame them about this list, because you're conditioned to hate them based on what I've previously told you. So just like get off my ass and go blame the Clintons again. It's basically what he's trying to do. Didn't really work this time. Let's continue. Why didn't these radical left lunatics release the Epstein files? So now it's their fault for not releasing the files. Okay. If there was anything in there that could have hurt the MAGA movement, why didn't they use it? Let's pause here for a second again. Let's be clear. Epstein, unalived himself while under the Trump administration. I think that's a detail that often goes not repeated enough. That happened under the Trump administration. We're also seeing now, remember when they said the cameras cut, and then as a safe fail, the administration put out a 4-hour live stream of the, not even of Epstein's cell, just of a cell, like in the general vicinity of where Epstein was being held. And then the amazing detectives on the internet discovered that. And then you remember Trump and his cabinet said, well, there's a minute or so of the film that's missing. Every 10 minutes, the film would go blank and we would be stitched back together. So we're assuming in that window where the film would go blank, you know how in most max high security prisons, they trust in a security system that automatically cuts and erases footage every 10 minutes or so. That just seems like a good rule of thumb if you're investing in, you know, security for a prison, especially someone that's on a live watch. So now we're seeing that the files were clearly edited in Adobe. They were able to just uncover the metadata. And for those that aren't aware, what metadata is basically like, if I send you a file, you can go into that project on Adobe and discover every action that happened to the file itself. So I can share it to you and be like, hey, this is unedited, undoctored footage. But if you have access to the metadata, you can see that's actually not true. You can see where the cuts were made, where the edits were made, and where the changes were made. on the back end, which is pretty awesome. So that clearly got blown out immediately and backfired for Trump. But here we are. We're still in scramble mode. So let's continue with this message here. They haven't even given up on the JFK or Martin Luther King Jr. files. No matter how much success we've had securing the border, deporting criminals, fixing the economy, here we go. He's just rattling through all the other things that he can, you know, get people riled up about. Energy dominance, a safer world where Iran will not have nuclear weapons. Here we go. Bring in the powerful and all we need to save Israel from the, you know, how Iran has had nuclear weapons. Iran has had nuclear weapons for decades, forever, since I can remember, probably since I was born. It's never enough for some people. We are about to achieve more in 6 months than any other administration has achieved in over 100 years. And we have so much more to do. We are saving our country and making America great again. He's very good at just branding, constantly just hammering his branding. Let's continue. Which will continue to be our complete priority. The left is imploding. Cash Patel and the FBI must be focused on investigating voter fraud, political corruption, Act Blue, and the rigged stolen election of 2020, and arresting thugs and criminals instead of spending month after month looking at nothing but the same old radical left-inspired documents on Jeffrey Epstein. This is what differentiates Trump from a lot of people. This is a conversation he could have had with Cash Patel and said, hey, man, you with your creepy fucking face, shut up about this Epstein shit. Just focus on these 10 things I just listed out here in this Truth Social post and get over it. Move past it. Focus on all the other, you know, flags that we've been waving and screaming fraud and all the everything else that's rigged and broken that we said we were going to fix. Get off this shit because I'm over it. And it's interesting that, I mean, he's explicitly telling Cash his marching orders on a public platform saying, hey, bro, this is what you need to be worried about. Stop worrying about the shit that I said is already dead. It's over with. Let's continue. Here in all caps, let Pam Bondi do her job. She's great. Interesting. I'm sure down the road he will turn on Pam Bondi as he does to everybody. But for now, she's great. But let's continue. The 2020 election was rigged and stolen. I love that we're just beating that drum still. And they tried to do the same thing in 2024. You're literally the fucking president. That's what she is looking into as AG and much more. 1 year ago, our country was dead. Yeah. Now it's the hottest in the hottest country anywhere in the world. I mean, geez, dude, this is so difficult to read. Let's keep it that way and not waste time and energy on Jeffrey Epstein, somebody that nobody cares about. Thank you for your attention to this matter. That was Trump's grand response on Truth Social. You can tell, I mean, he's grasping at straws here. This message is just riddled with all the other things that he wants people to focus on. He's trying to throw the scent off the trail. He was asked in the press, in the briefing room. He actually wasn't even asked about it. Pam Bondi was asked about a question regarding Epstein, and Trump interjected and basically gave up one of those, like, we're still talking about this guy? He's been dead for years. He did one of those, like, he tried to just... It's when you know you're in the wrong and when you know you got and the decision you made is bad and you're trying to convince everybody else that is very invested in a situation to just get over it because you realize you messed up and you got and you didn't keep your word. So now you're just deflecting and acting like it was never a big deal and to begin with. You're like, why are we still talking? Bro's been dead for like 4 or 5 years. Who cares anymore? It's like, no. You ran on that. This was your big tick, one of your many big ticket items that you professed time and time again, blaming the Clintons, now saying that they in fact created the client list. And I know what people are going to say, your affiliation, you love Bill. I will say Clinton is one of those people, one of the only political figures when this whole list became a thing. He has been saying from the jump, release the list, put it out. He has been pretty loud and vocal about where his stance is on this whole case. Just put it out. Let the truth of the crimes speak for themselves. And then from there, go about the justice process, which we're seeing here is never going to happen. All of a sudden, it's just Epstein. It was him the whole time, and nobody seems to care. Well, pardon me. Trump is trying to get his base not to care. But for one of the first times I'm seeing this, they're turning on him because they've been conditioned to be so invested in this case. For him to turn his back on them and say it was never a big deal is a really big hammer to the face of the MAGA movement. And I do think, yeah, I still think that there's a chance that he will run again and he could probably potentially win again, just, you know, based off he seems pretty adamant about breaking term rules and continuing to go down this process. But say that is true and say he finds a way to, you know, weasel his way back into an election. It's stuff like this that really breaks trust. And we're seeing the turn now from other podcasters, Joe Rogan, you know, Schultz. I saw the episode on Flagrant. Schultz has been getting a lot of flack online from that. And other, you know, seemingly right-leaning podcasts that have discussed this in extensive matter or even have had them on, had Trump on their shows. But of course, this never came up as a topic when they had him in front of them. I can see why. Trump's obviously very much incriminated in these files, and that probably would have led to him walking out or someone gone missing a day or two after that. So who's to say? It's an incredibly interesting case to follow. And as much as Trump wants Epstein to go away, he won't. And whether that's true, whether or not he's dead or, you know, sipping a Mai Tai on a recently plowed Palestinian land and enjoying the rest of his life in, you know, occupied Gaza. So very interesting. Certainly worth following, if not for the case itself, because it seems like we're not going to get any information there, just for the overall landscape of what's happening to the MAGA movement in particular. And when I say MAGA, I'm saying specifically MAGA. I know I feel really bad for, I don't feel bad for them, but like there are people that are more right center, like just, you know, your more, I'd say traditional Republicans, maybe those that don't even support Trump. But it's really interesting to just focus on that diehard MAGA crowd, because this is a heartbreaking moment for them. This matters more than any of the other stuff that you would think as a person with just, like, you know, empathy and common decency. This hurts so much more than, say, our version of the concentration camps at Alligator Alcatraz or the concentration camp deal that Trump is currently speaking to with Netanyahu. Like, don't mind the stripping of kids and mothers from their families and throwing them at a holding cell in Florida surrounded by alligators, where it's so, everything is a fucking show that we're selling merch to celebrate, you know, an American concentration camp. We can ignore that. We can excuse that. Oh no. What about the one where he is, you know, giving Netanyahu an HJ under the table in the Oval Office while they breach a deal to determine where they're going to just kind of store the rest of the Palestinian people while they just continue to clear off the greater Israel land that they're just deciding to take and erect more homes for their settlers. We can excuse all of that, but what we can't excuse are these files for Epstein. So Trump put himself in this position, and it's going to be really interesting to see him get himself out. Let's stay on politics, but go a little more local, because you can't talk local New York politics without including Israel. So let's say Zohran Mamdani has been getting absolutely decimated publicly by other Democratic affiliates, because God forbid the Democratic Party has someone that is universally rallied behind by voters in a clear landslide victory in the primaries, but still will not get the support from the party itself. It's just classic Democrat Party, because if it doesn't fall in line with what they'd like, then you're a bad guy and you need to get the hell out of here. Someone that's been increasingly vocal and critical of Mamdani is Hakeem Jeffries. If you're not familiar, if you're not from New York, Hakeem Jeffries is the minority leader of the House Democratic Caucus. He's a black man born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I believe he was born in Crown Heights. But Hakeem, like most Democrats, takes a little bit of money from AIPAC. AIPAC has supplied Hakeem with nearly $1.3 million in funding. So now we're seeing someone who's black and from Brooklyn prioritizing the well-being of people that don't even live in this country, over his own constituents and what's right for the very people in the communities in which he grew up and currently serves, to no surprise. So also now Cuomo has officially launched his candidacy, his independent run for mayor, which I did call. I figured he would run as an independent regardless of the outcome of the primaries. And he just released a video today of him walking around New York because Zohran has, you know, now popularized street content and being seen amongst the people. Cuomo did his shit attempt at that, going up to black people in the street, giving them dap, going up to black guys in cars, giving them more dap, going up to black women, taking selfies with them, going up to black little children, you know, admiring their shoes. Like, it's the saddest attempt at, you know, publicly showing and using black people as like a linchpin to get to win the vote, where in fact where your allegiance lies and where the people you plan to serve and protect the most are just are not the very people that you're going to show on your ads. It's such a phony way to go about campaigning, which is why I really love what Zohran has been doing. But Cuomo, if you look at the breakdown, he had a pretty sizable amount of support from the African-American voter community here in New York. And it's very clear that his allegiance, much like any other Democrats, it falls with wherever, whatever they can do to better support Israel, take care of the mess that they've been creating in the Middle East. So to go out of your way to only shoot a commercial with black people and just use them as a prop to then turn around and, you know, serve interests that will not, nothing that you're doing or nothing you're putting in place will better those communities for the people that you're using in your commercials. It's such a phony fucking way to go about, but it's politics. That's what they do. They're all fucking bunch of assholes. So I'm invested in this very closely, obviously because I live in New York, but I'm just like kind of fascinated with how Zohran is being positioned. And there's a clear divide between what the people of New York want and what those at the power it be that hold the reins of New York want. I have said a few times I fear for his safety, and I fear for his wife's safety as well. And I just, knock on wood, I just would not be surprised if anything were to happen to him. I would just say it would not be an accident. Which is really awful to say, but I mean, that's the state of politics, and that's what's at play here. New York is the most powerful state in this country, and it holds a lot of weight that can affect global and global change. And if people see a city like New York prop up a democratic socialist, especially one who is Muslim, that does not bode well for a lot of people. We don't even need to get into his stance on Israel and Palestine. You can just stick to his policies alone are a threat to not only the country, but the Democratic Party itself and the allies of the DSA. Before I get out of here, I do want to just talk to the good people that are in Texas. If you're listening from Texas, I've been following the natural disasters and the tragedies there pretty closely, and it's awful what happened to the camp and the students at that camp, and the lack of response and appropriate and timely response from the government officials that are down there. Especially how your boy Ted Cruz just up and skated and went on vacation when you're going through a traumatic thing in his own home state. But classic Ted Cruz. It's really difficult to see things like this happen, things that are beyond control, and the things that are the results of global warming and you know, wind changes and pattern changes with water rising and the limited amount of time people have to react, and not only losing their belongings, if you were to survive, but, you know, losing loved ones, pets, really anything of significant value, and how difficult it is to rebuild in a time like that when you're losing everything in the flash of an eye. And even when you do know it's coming, say you get an alert or a text, what can you do to prepare in this situation? You feel helpless, and it's really sad. And you're seeing the communities from Mexico actually pack their trucks up, drive into the floodwaters and do a search and rescue, find people and, you know, pull them out and just protect people, because the lines of a country are a construct that we've created to, you know, create a hierarchy and divide people. But the amazing people that drove in from Mexico looked beyond the nonsense that our government has been talking about them and how they're looked at as like second class citizens. And they prioritize the human life over anything, over any political affiliation, over any back talk from a leader, from our highest courts to the local government, probably in the communities that they went and helped. I'm sure the people there have said awful things about the immigrant community and the people of Mexico. And it's just when things like that happen, just keep in mind that your neighbor, the people that you know you occupy space with, it's always bigger than the policies and what you're told to believe or how to believe about people. I just want to keep that in mind. I also saw that in Texas there are a flesh-eating maggot that's currently going around, and I saw that there's a government plan potentially to release millions of flies over, like via cargo ships over Texas, because these flies will go out and eat the flesh-eating maggots. I mean, what's going on in Texas right now? I understand that there are good tax breaks, but is it worth living down there if you're going through all of that other nonsense? Personally, no. But you know, I'm not, you know, the person that needs to make that decision. But that is all for me. I will be back. I honestly may put out a part two or like another episode later this week. We'll see. I just have to keep an eye out on it. But I'm super excited to discuss all the incredible music that came out this week and all the titular moments that will be etched in hip hop history. I'm really saving all my takes for that episode, but I'm very excited about it. Until then, I love you all. Thank you for tuning in. Enjoy my new setup as I dip up out of frame here, and I'll talk to you soon. Peace.